Welcome to the Financial Beast Podcast, the practice owner's guide to maximize practice value and create personal financial success. Your host, Eric Miller, is the co-owner and chief advisor at Econologix Financial Advisors. He is also a national speaker and published author in financial matters focused on practice owners at every phase of ownership.
All right, welcome back to the Financial Beast Podcast for veterinarians and veterinary owners. This is the place where veterinarians come to like get shown how to harness the power of their practice, build personal wealth, and go out at the top of their game. I'm Chief Advisor Eric Miller. I'm here with
Financial Advisor Eric Gersh.
And we are going to be your host today. All right, we were just talking about this from the topic. We're going to talk about emergency funds, and we're just like, geez, how are we going to talk for like 30 minutes about emergency funds?
I don't know, man. But I don't know.
We'll try to figure out a way to do this. I think, you know, we do have to kind of talk about some of the craze that's going on right now, because, you know, at the time of this taping, there's a lot of distrust, or I don't even say distrust. I think it's a
fear
of banks.
Yep.
Bank runs. You know, we're taping this and it's been about 2 weeks and we've had four banks.
I thought it was three. SVB.
Yeah.
Signature. Silvergate.
First Republic.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
And four. Then Credit Suisse, which isn't an American bank.
They got bailed out.
But everybody gets bailed out.
UBS, man.
Everybody, we're in bailout. We are now in a bailout country right now. But I think it does. I think what we're going to do, we're going to have to change what we're going to talk about. It's not just the amount of emergency funds. It's where you keep the emergency funds.
Good point.
You know,
that's a very good point.
So I think we can probably talk for 30 minutes on that. And this is crap, because veterinarians shouldn't have to worry about this. You know, they shouldn't have to worry about, hey, I'm going to put money in my bank, and I have to actually worry about whether or not the deposit is going to be there when I need it or not. Because honestly, who really looks at the balance sheet of a bank when you're going to deposit?
I mean, who knows how to even read it?
It's hard for me to look at some. Yeah. I mean, it's pages upon pages upon pages. And you really don't know until after the fact.
No, everything's good until suddenly they're failing.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I guess you could just go to the big four and, but even then, who knows? So this isn't like an indictment of the banking system, but we will, cause you do need a banking system to operate an economy. And, but we probably should talk a little bit about some other alternatives to where to put your emergency funds, and then how much you should be keeping in, you know, your bank and your business checking, your personal savings and personal checking and all that. For transactions and such. So, all right. I think this came about on the emergency funds just because, you know, pre-pandemic, I don't know about you, but I tended to see that most people didn't have very much in their business checking accounts, maybe enough to cover a payroll. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta agree.
Yeah. So when we start talking about being able to have an emergency funds, you know, what is an emergency? And I guess the best definition that I've ever heard of an emergency is a predictable expense that is, I'm butchering this right now. Something that is predictable, but you don't know when it's going to happen.
Like, right? a broken AC.
Exactly. Like, you know, at some point your AC is going to break down.
Yep.
That's predictable. Yep. You just don't know when, right? It's predictable that you can lose some staff.
Totally.
Right. You just don't know when.
Yep.
Right. It's predictable that, every 6 or 7 years we have some kind of, event that happens in the world economy that kind of threatens everything and everyone. You just don't know when it's going to happen.
Yep.
Right. So it's the unpredictability of time, but the predictability of the emergency that we know is going to happen. So now the last time that we had a, an emergency, which, you know, was everyone was shut down or had, I don't know, what else did they do? They modified what they, their hours and what you could see and
cut back services.
I think what did most veterinarians do? They did a lot of,
they did a lot of curbside.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they, most of them kept operating pretty normal.
Yeah.
But I mean, there were some of them too, that were limited that couldn't like do they could only do emergency services. There we go.
Yeah. Anyway, there was some things that, certainly put some pressure on your business. And fortunately, there was a lot of government assistance that came in.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw the effects of that. Now, I think it definitely helped in the short term, but it was really, really destructive in the long term, because now we're seeing all the inflation that's becoming the...
we're paying for it now.
Now we're paying for the hundreds of thousands that you got. So let's just go under the assumption that we don't want to be in that condition anymore, right? And when it comes to protecting your business, you do have to make sure that you have enough to be able to handle any kind of a unpredictable expense, right? And, you know, so how much? How much should you have? So we kind of go back and forth on this, but I think 3 months is probably what you should have.
Three?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think that might be a little bit excessive?
It could be, but
I say two.
It's fine. 2 to 3 months then. We'll agree on that. But it's definitely more than one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely more than one, and I think you need to have at least, so we'll say at least 4 payrolls.
Okay.
Right? And when I say that, it's, you know, how much we want you to have obviously is enough where you could keep the lights on if you had to be shut down for at least 2 to 3 months, because stuff like that does happen, you know? And, so I think that would be the target right there. And then, so look, if you got a practice that's doing, I don't know, 100,000 a month, and let's say your expenses are 80 grand, payroll, rent, all those. I'm not talking about your profits. I'm just talking about like what your true expenses are.
Operating.
Right? Operating expenses. Yep. So, you know, theoretically, you should have, what is that? 80 times?
$160.
$160 to $240. You know, somewhere between there. Yep. Those three numbers right there. And people are like, oh my God, I should have that much. I'm like, yeah. And it's not just for like shutdowns. It's for what happens if an associate, if you want to bring on an associate.
Signing bonus.
You know, what happens if you have to defend yourself because one of your employees goes on Yelp or goes to a local newspaper and starts bad mouthing you, right?
Lots of legal fees.
Yeah. What happens if, you know, a regulatory body comes in and says, you know, you're deficient here. We're going to fine you of it. Some clients have gotten fined 10, 15,000, 20,000. So you need to be able to protect yourself. You know, and unfortunately, if you don't have money, you can't protect yourself.
No,
you know, at all. So, I mean, there's lawsuits that cost someone $100,000.
Easy.
That's, and you can't protect yourself if you don't have the money to do it.
No, you need to.
So
you need to have a liquid.
Yeah. So that's why we say you have to have emergency funds in the business, because I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that something is likely to happen. Now, most people don't have that.
No, nowhere near.
Right. So how do we get them to start that?
I usually do it the slow and steady route.
Yep.
Tell people, hey, let's set up $1,000 a week or $500 a week, whatever the amount is, it doesn't matter. But let's set up an amount each week that automatically goes from your checking to your savings.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way.
Yeah. You got to physically, you have to remove the money from one account and rip it into another account.
Make it automatic too.
And make it automatic. That's the only way that you're going to do that. So, you know, we talk about the four accounts that most owners are not setting up, that they need to set up to like build in their, what we call their profits. Cause technically that would be a profit, because you may not spend it at the end of the year.
True.
Right. Yep. So you'll have to pay tax on it. I don't care. You know, maybe the tax account. So, you know, we talk about having your, what we call your household wealth storage account. That's for the purpose of the household. We have your tax account. That's to make sure that you cover your tax liability. Then we have the business, the protection and the liability account. That's the business savings account that you're talking about, right? So that'd be account number three. And the percentage of how much you should put in there, you know, I think ideally 3 to 5% of revenues it should target.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
You know, and that would allow you to gradually, you know, get that money saved in that account over time.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't have it's not a race to get it in there.
No, it takes time to build up. It's not, I mean, you're not obviously going to wake up one day and just have $150,000 in your savings account
for
most people, but it's doable over the course of, you know, spend 2 to 3 years on it and it can happen.
Yeah, for sure. And then the fourth account, just so we're clear, is the business expansion and development account. That's what you would use for, you know, buying equipment or maybe putting down payment on a new building or, you know,
build out
or something like that. So we kind of build all these things in because they're important. And we look at them as expenses because you have to treat them like that for them to be there. That builds in your profit. It does a lot of really good things. But I think the emergency funds then for the business is, 2 to 3 months. So I think if you don't have it right now, build it into your make break number so that you're taking out, maybe start, like you said, with $500 or $1,000, but try to get it to the point where that makes about, or it makes up about 3 to 5% of your gross revenues that you're channeling to that account.
Yeah. That should be doable with, veterinary margins. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. And it'll force you to like work faster. Yeah. It'll force you to make sure that you're looking at your.
Yeah. You're putting the pressure on the practice.
Yeah. Create necessity on the practice and make sure that there's enough. Everyone knows like this is the new make break number right now. I have to factor in. I'm not factoring in these things I did before. I have to now. So instead of like, you know, $110,000 make break number. Now it's 125.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when you spread, so what's the difference
there? I mean, that's $500 a day throughout the course of a month.
Yeah. It's not much.
It's like 2 appointments.
It's not much. Yeah. So I think if you just break it down and look at it that way, it's going to be a lot more confrontable to handle that. All right. Personal.
90 days. I agree with 90 days over here on the personal side for sure.
Where'd you get 90 days from?
It's like, I don't know. It's like one of the 10 commandments, 90 day emergency fund.
Oh my God, man.
I mean, I hear 6 months too.
How about a year?
Oh,
how about a year?
I think that might be a little excessive.
I think it's all arbitrary, to be honest with you.
I mean, are you an employee or are you an owner?
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, I think what we usually do, I mean, a question I ask most people is like, hey, how much do you need to keep liquid to make yourself feel all warm and fuzzy inside?
Yeah.
You know, and I get various answers. I get like 50,000 or 100,000 or so. Maybe it's not a number of months. Maybe it's just a number.
True.
You know, maybe it's just a number. Like how much would you need liquid to be like, all right, I could function here.
Yeah. You can function. And too, I mean, I think the other piece that
and reorganize, or if something happened, I could like,
yeah. And if something, you know, life changing happens, generally people are spending, you know, they might be spending more on that specific event, but social life may slow down and, you know,
you may cut back on your expenses.
Some things come and some things go. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think each 50,000 should be the minimum someone has in personal emergency funds. Minimum.
I can agree with that. For a doctor. Yeah.
You know, cause most of these people are going to have household expenses of at least 10,000 a month.
Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah.
15,000 a month probably is more like it.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was thinking.
15. So whether it's a month or a number, it's all arbitrary. It's like, what do you guys need? I mean, just know that, you know, if something happens that, you know, your practice loses its ability to earn income and see patients and you don't have any other income sources because you haven't listened to us, then you're going to,
are you going to be safe?
Yeah. You got to have enough to be able to do that. So, you know, again, it's really all dependent up to you. But I have some people that if they don't have $200,000 in their liquid accounts, they're like freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh my God, I need that much.
Yep. And I have other people that think having more than 20,000 is a waste.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's just going to be dependent upon you on what you guys feel like you would need. You know, your spending habits, you know, yourself better than we do at this point in time. So I think that's kind of a key. Now, I'll tell you how I usually got people to save in their emergency funds.
How?
Well, you know how we have the 10% from the practice that goes to the wealth storage account.
Yep.
So if you guys don't know what a wealth storage account is, basically it's just a bank account that we have owners set up outside of what they're normally doing. It's a personal account. And we have you take 10% of the practice revenues or a schedule of some kind and have you transfer money over there so that you can buy real estate, invest in the markets, you know.
Grow your net worth,
right? Just accelerate the process. And we do it because, you know, I don't want you to be dependent upon the business or the sale of the business for the rest of your life. You know, you need to build multiple sources of income, but we're going to use the business to do it. That's harnessing the power of the practice to build personal wealth. Yep. So we have you set up that account, the wealth storage account, and then just start channeling money over there. And I usually we usually have a target then of whatever is not getting deployed into real estate or insurance products or wealth management. That's what I usually use for the emergency fund right there.
Yeah. And that's usually for most people, I would say a minimum of 40,000.
Yeah.
All the way up to 100,000. I have some people that never want to see it below six figures.
Yeah. But they do like seeing it over there, don't they?
They do.
Yeah. It's really nice to see that, oh, I got 100,000 or 50,000 sitting over there.
It makes them feel safe.
Yep. And then as the money comes in over and above that, you know, it goes from 50,000 to 100,000. Okay, great. Now I can take, you know, 40,000 and I can go invest in this, you know, whatever, real estate deal. Or I can invest in, you know, this stock or whatever it is that you want to, you know, that's going to start building wealth for you. But it certainly accelerates the process because I think we did what we're telling people to put away from the practice and then what a normal advisor tells them to put away. Most of the normal advisors just like
max your 401k,
max your retirement plans. And that's pretty much it. Right. So that counts for like 100% of their retirement.
Yeah, it's nowhere near 10% of practice revenue.
Yeah. So when we have you take, if you're doing a $1 million practice and let's say theoretically you're doing 80,000 or 100,000 out of the practice to like put in other investments, that pales in comparison to, well, no, your retirement plan contributions pale in comparison to that.
Yeah. It's
not
even a quarter.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's how we would get you to build emergency funds personally, by doing that. And, again, you know, we just have it incorporated into the business make break number that amount. And That's it's the simplicity of how it works.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it all goes back to the business.
Yeah. I mean, we're just trying to utilize the business better, and you guys got to make it more profitable. You can't give services away. You know, you can't not get production from your associates. I mean, your veterinarians need to produce. They just can't sit around and do nothing. You need to make sure your people are scheduling scheduling patients and
can't be afraid to charge appropriately.
You got to keep your average transactions above a certain level. You just can't let those things go and expect money to show up. I mean, those are things that you have to do as an owner. But yeah, it shouldn't take forever to build up these emergency funds. But okay, now things have changed, man. So now emergency funds, you know, usually were just kept in banks.
Yeah. Where should I keep that money?
Well, let's talk about some of the different financial institutions out there.
Yep.
Right. So banks, I think we all are seeing right now technically when you put money, you deposit money into a bank, I think maybe some people know this, some people don't. You are literally lending them that money.
Yeah. You're a creditor.
You're a creditor. Yep. Right. And there are FDIC protections, I know all that, but you're technically lending them to the bank. It's their money at that point in time.
Yeah. And then they turn around and they lend it out and
yeah.
fractions come into play. And
so my point is that they operate on leverage.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's how banks operate.
Yeah. That's how they're, that's the only way they can be profitable.
And if they lend to people that don't pay them back, or they mismanage the deposits, which is, I think, what happened with most of these banks that went under, right? Yep. Then that's where you get the run on the bank yep. because they become...
People get scared.
People get scared.
Panic spreads, especially social media nowadays. Oh my God. I mean, it takes 30 minutes for something to spread across the world. And next thing you know, everyone's just grabbing their phone, online banking. You can move your money out in 5 seconds. And it's just...
Yeah.
It's quick and easy now.
Yeah. So these things can happen and they're going to sell, they're going to accelerate this, you know, interest rates going up as fast as they did was just bound to break something, you know, because a lot of people that had assets that were interest rate sensitive.
Yeah, now they're stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to hold to maturity to not lose money.
Yeah. So my point is like banks are, while they're dependable until they're not.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. That's fair.
So, but they do operate on leverage, guys. So, I mean, just don't think that like this is the only place that you can position your money for liquidity and to do transactions and such. Now, another place that you can store cash, and you know, which we do for folks is insurance-based products. You yep. know, they have if you have a cash value life insurance policy, it can hold cash.
Yeah.
Right. And if you build it correctly, it can hold a lot of cash. And you know, you can hold cash there, and then you have access to it through a loan mechanism in yep. in the policy.
It's liquid.
And you know, insurance companies are much different than banks.
Safer.
Yeah, they're much safer. I know some insurance companies have went belly up, but you don't see the rate of insurance companies going bankrupt near the ratio that you do banks.
Much, much more rare.
Yeah. So, and that makes sense, but you also don't make a ton of money working with insurance companies.
No, you're going to make 3 to 6% a year.
And yeah. If you get lucky, maybe 7 or 8% in some cases, but yeah, I mean, that's what you're going to make. So, but their job is to protect the money. They don't operate on leverage. I don't think they lend. I mean, they lend money out when they buy corporate bonds or they buy bonds or things like that. But I mean, those are.
But I would also argue too that if we're talking about emergency funds, what they're earning really isn't super important. It's the fact that the money's there when you need it. That,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the top of the.
Yeah. Hierarchy. Liquidity, right? Yeah. Liquidity there. So, and you do have that in certain insurance contracts through the loan mechanism. I mean, they do have surrender charges and things like if you cancel the contracts, so you got to be careful. You got to get the right kind of policy. You got to build it correctly. You yes. got to fund it correctly. I mean, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to go do this myself. And
it's not yeah. perfect for every situation.
No, not at all. But I think it's part of a person's portfolio. And if you don't feel safe with the banks, then that's a place to do it as well. I know people are talking about crypto and gold and silver, but I mean, those things just aren't that liquid, I don't think.
And they're pretty yeah. speculative.
They're really speculative.
Too extremely speculative.
Yeah, they'll go up and down in value too much, you know. Yeah. So that kind of leaves then the other institutions. So we talked about depository institutions, which are banks, contractual institutions, which are insurance companies. And then we're talking about investment institutions, which are like brokerage firms,
yep.
right? So now a lot of people have brokerage accounts like a TD Ameritrade or Fidelity or yep. Schwab or people are like, oh my gosh, you can keep emergency funds there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not? So, I mean, just because the brokerage firm offers brokerage firms offer lots of different types of investments that you can put money into.
Yeah. You've got everything from like literal money market funds all the way up to the most aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, derivatives you can think of.
Options yeah. or ETFs or yeah. index funds or mutual funds or.
But for an emergency fund, I mean, you can do some simple money market, treasuries.
Yep.
Some slow, steady, safe where it can be converted to cash quickly, but it can also earn a little something along the way.
Yeah. So what we've been kind of telling people here recently is, you know, treasury bills.
Yep.
Right. And what is a treasury bill?
It's a it's a bill from the government. I mean, you basically buy it at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it matures, they pay you the interest plus your money back.
Right. And treasury bills are different because they're much shorter term.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They can be as little as 30 days.
Yeah. 30 days, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. It's almost like a CD in that respect. A year, really. You know? And I wouldn't go anything past a year.
No.
Right. But the treasury bill matures in that time frame, and they pay, you know, an annual interest rate right now. I mean, I think I haven't looked at the yields. I'm sure they've come down a little bit, but they're probably in the fours.
It's low fours.
Yeah. 4.2, 4.1, 4.3, somewhere around there. And you can buy all these treasury bills. And now, obviously, I think you want to go through someone like us, you know, a registered investment advisor, so that they're being purchased correctly, that you can maintain liquidity. You can go direct to the Treasury, U.S. Treasury, and do it. But then if you sell them,
you got to hold them to maturity.
You got to hold them to maturity.
You got to transfer them to a broker. You got to pay a broker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
not ideal.
It's not perfect. So, but you can open up a brokerage account with someone like us or, you know, another investment advisor and have a Treasury bill portfolio.
Yeah. Simple.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to pay you 4.1, 4.2%. On your money, which is higher than what you're getting right now in your personal checking and savings account. But again, this isn't money that you're going to need. And as the treasury bills mature, okay, my 3 month just matured.
You can either use it or you can reinvest it.
Yeah. So I would just go ahead and reinvest it. Yep. But they're short term. They are liquid because everybody loves treasury bills. You can buy, you can sell them. I mean, your only risk is if you sell the treasury bill before its maturity and the interest rate has affected the price.
Yep.
Right. But again, let me.
Or if the US government defaults.
Well,
then we're all screwed. So
this is where Gersh gets on his tinfoil hat and, you know,
we don't got to go into that.
So
it wouldn't be good.
Really would not be good.
No.
That's not going to be good for anybody.
That's not going to be good for the entire world.
Yes. So. That would be bad.
No. In all fairness, the US government has never defaulted on a single treasury. And
they'll make the money worthless before they'll default.
Yeah,
they'll print as much as you possibly can before they'll make
the money. They're not defaulting.
Default. So now your treasury bill yielding 4% may not be that much of a difference when inflation is at 10. But again, this is why you have multiple assets that are producing a lot of income so you can help fight inflation, not just, you know, worried about the investment portfolio. But what's the other benefit of treasury bills over just keeping in a checking and savings account?
Taxes.
Taxes too.
It's exempt from state and local taxes. All you got to pay is federal.
That's big. And like,
if you're in New York, Massachusetts, California, I mean, you could be talking 10% plus.
Minnesota is another one that I saw. So yeah, I mean, if it avoids the state and local tax that you would otherwise have to pay that on yields on your checking and savings accounts. So I really like treasury bills for business savings. And again, you can open up a business brokerage account, right?
Yeah, and business just owns the account.
Business owns the account. Business is just on the account, right? So you can open up a brokerage account. We have had some people that have done this. And then just own the treasury bills inside of the business brokerage account. It's really simple. It's not that hard to do.
Doing this right now with a client.
Yeah, we're doing it. We've done it with a lot of people. So, and that I think is probably a bit of a safer play right now if you're super concerned about banks to do something like that other than just leaving it, you know, unprotected. And with brokerage accounts, there is people, okay, what if the brokerage firm goes belly up?
There's SPIC.
SIPC.
Nice. SIPC.
You were close. Yeah.
It's up to 500.
You flunked a Series 65 that day, didn't you?
Yeah.
SIPC, what is it at?
500.
It's 500,000. So so you do have protections if a brokerage firm goes under. Again, it's very rare that happens. I know Bear Stearns, I think, went.
Lehman Brothers.
Yeah. But I mean, it's rare that those things go under.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I think, you know, that's. These things can't happen. There's no perfect solution, but I think that would be a safer play right now for business savings and personal savings as well that aren't going to be put to use in other investments. So look at that. We were able to talk about emergency funds.
I'm impressed.
Business and personal in less than 30 minutes. That's pretty good, yeah. Gersh. Nice job. Okay. Look, if you like what you're hearing right now, make sure that you give us a review on the podcast and make sure that you send it to, you know, 5 of your veterinary friends, because we definitely are on a mission to help as many veterinary owners as we possibly can make sure they get themselves into financial beast mode. So we'll see you on the next podcast. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
You have been listening to the Financial Beast podcast, where we talk about how to turn practice profits into personal financial wealth. For more information on how to become a financial beast in practice ownership, visit financialbeastpodcast.com. You may also want to call the office at 727-588-1540 to request more information on becoming a client or arrange to have Eric speak at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or financialbeastpodcast.com.